States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Mary, we have a roll call.
Boro?
Here.
Dupire?
Here.
Guasco?
Here.
Hartzell?
Here.
Heller?
Present.
Johnson?
Here.
Miggs? Lappert? Phillips? Levine? Hilmer? Sullivan?
Just a little housekeeping note here. Item number 13, this item has been removed from tonight's meeting agenda. Okay, next up is open time for public participation. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on an item that's not on the agenda? All right, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the consent calendar. Do I have the purpose of the consent calendar is to vote with one motion a group of items that are to group a select number of items for one vote. Is there anybody that wishes to? Commissioner Johnson?
Yes, I would ask that item number 4G be pulled.
4G?
I move approval of A through F and H.
Second.
Is there anybody from the public that wishes to discuss an item? Seeing none, I'll kind of call it back. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay, item 4G. What was listed?
First of all, I wanted it to go in the minutes and be as part of the public record that this contract would require CEQA examination and that no environmental work has been done on it. I also wanted to ask that note that there's liability that is being assumed by this contract on the member agencies, and under item number 16, there's no on page 8, there's a confidentiality clause that I wanted to know, how does that interact with the Public Records Act request provisions, as well as I wanted to point it out that there is no charge under this contract for collection services, which would mean that the rest of the member agencies of CMSA would be subsidizing San Quentin's collection costs. The charges under this contract are only for treatment and debt servicing for the wet weather improvement project. So this fails to meet the proportionality concept of charging rates for services, and I therefore object to the entire contract.
Any other comments on 4G? Jason, can you answer some of these questions? CEQA? Is it subject to CEQA?
I'm not sure if it is subject to CEQA. I would say that it probably isn't. I don't see why it would be subject to CEQA, since CMSA is already providing all of the treatment of the wastewater, and the actual work that's being done out there is just operation and maintenance. There's no construction or new facilities being built that would trigger CEQA that I'm aware of. And regarding the no charge for collections, there is a charge for operation and maintenance of the pump station, which is with only collection type activities within the scope of work. San Quentin State Prison and the Department of Corrections, they operate, own, and maintain the gravity and pressure collection system in the prison property, except for the 16-inch pipeline connecting the pump station to the Ross Valley Interceptor.
Is there a liability to the member agencies under number 16?
You know, Council Golby reviewed this in that particular section, and he didn't provide any comments, you know, with any concerns regarding liability.
Commissioner Boston.
What
does the acronym,
OSATs?
WTF. What's that?
Page.
What page?
Oh, first page of the agreement.
Don't answer yet. Let's see if anyone can figure it out.
Torre Madero Water Treatment Facility. Central Marin Water Treatment Facility. You know what it is? Central Marin Water Treatment Facility.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, acronym WCM WTF. That should be WWTP. But it means Central Marin Water Treatment Facility.
And then it was pointed out to me that we're referred to as sanitation agency somewhere. Yeah.
Can you please tell us the page?
Oh, yeah, page one, third whereas down, bottom of the last sentence, it says Ross Valley Sanitation District, and we're a sanitary district.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, what I'll do is, you know, after this meeting, I will go ahead and make those two edits to page one, and I'll send this page up to corrections, because tomorrow morning the Director of Department of Corrections and the Office of Business Services will be signing this agreement, and they have to have five West signatures. So I'll go ahead and make those two edits so those are corrected.
Okay. Commissioner Hartzell, do you have any comments?
No.
Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor of anybody from the public that wishes to comment on 4G? Okay, seeing none.
Is there a motion? Can somebody make a
motion? I'm going to ask for a motion to approve 4G with the two changes.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
None.
No. And next up is item number 5, the Governance Finance Officers Association Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. Jason.
Yeah, one sec, I'm just making some notes here about the corrections in the page of the whereas statements there. Okay. Well, last June, the board adopted the agency's fiscal year 12 budget, and we reported to the board at that time that we were going to convert that adopted budget to one that meets the criteria established by the Government Finance Office Association for what they recommend public agencies should include within their budgets. And that's, they generally say that budgets should be financial plans, operations guides, communication devices, and policy documents. They have various criteria within each of these categories. And so I reported that to the board in June, and our finance staff spent quite a bit of time, you know, researching what the criteria are, how to comply with criteria, what new documents and pages and write-ups and displays and metrics should be included in this transform budget. And they identified several other wastewater and water agencies in the state that had GFOA, you know, compliant budgets, and there's not very many. And they started the process to transform the budget. And as I noted here in the staff report and mentioned to the board last June, is that Michelle Plaw, who is a consultant, used to be a director of BACWA, she went through a very similar process with the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, which is sewer, power, and water, converting their budget to the GFOA format, and they won the GFOA budget award. So she offered to come here and just assist the agency on a couple different days and give us some feedback and tips on our initial, you know, transformation process and development of new materials, which was very beneficial. And I'm just proud to announce that a couple weeks ago, the GFOA awarded the agency the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award and said it was compliant with nearly all of its criteria. And I just want to acknowledge the exceptional work by the finance staff in doing this transformation process. Mr. Hank Jin, finance manager, Ms. Heidi Lang, the finance analyst, Antar, our accountant technician, and Mary here, did a lot of work in helping with the layout and editing of the GFOA budget also. So it was great teamwork by the staff, and I think this is a pretty significant award because not many agencies in the state have this type of award for their budgets. And I don't think any agency in Marin County has a distinguished budget award. So the staff's recommendation is to accept the award from the GFOA.
Thank you.
And attached to the staff report is a printout of what the budget will look like. It will be a plaque, and we should receive that in a month or 2 months, and we'll find somewhere to put on the wall here.
Just a question. I was just curious. Who's eligible for this award? Any local government or state government agency?
I think it's, I don't know specifically, but I would say state agencies, county governments, local agencies. And it's not a competition.
No.
It's just they have these established criteria, and if you prepare the budget and it meets all of those criteria, then you'll receive the award. It's very similar to the comprehensive annual financial report or the popular annual financial report. It's not a competition. It's just meeting the criteria to improve the readability and transparency of your financial operations.
Okay, good.
Okay, Commissioner Johnson.
Yes, on the third page in the section, it's the letter. It says in the middle, our review indicated that your budgeted document failed to satisfy the criteria of policy number 4. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, the policy number 4 is what they recommend. Well, actually, they have a lot of criteria, and there's mandatory criteria, then there's recommended criteria. And they evaluate you on everything. And policy number 4 pertains to your agency's financial policies. And they say that you should summarize your agency's financial policies in the actual document. And the way we did that the first time is that we showed kind of a neat little display, the graphic, with the title of all the policies and how they interrelate. And we made a reference that the agency's board adopted financial policies on our website. Well, some of the reviewers thought that would be cumbersome having to go to the website to take a look at the policies. They said, you've identified it, but you should have a brief sentence or two just giving an overview of what the content of that policy is.
Yeah, a narrative.
Yeah. So all the comments we received from the GFOA were very constructive and positive. A lot of great comments, a lot of areas for some improvements and recommendations. So after the fiscal year 13 budget is adopted, we'll start to transform it to the GFOA format. Then we'll take all their recommended improvement areas and we'll incorporate those into the fiscal 13 GFOA budget. And we'll probably submit that in August or September. Then we'll bring copies to the board and we'll also post it on the website. Just like this is the GFOA budget that's on the agency's website. It's probably 30% thicker than the budget that the board adopted last year with all this extra additional information to meet the GFOA criteria.
So the budget that we have for approval is not the budget that is going to be submitted to them? Is that what you're saying?
The budget that was adopted by the board last June was not the budget that we submitted to the GFOA. We took that budget
and
we...
Don't ask about that now.
We're not adopting a budget tonight.
No, but the one that's in our packet.
In June, the board will have a budget that contains most of this. There'll be some additional materials, informational type materials, that won't be included with that. But we'll, like last year, we'll hand that out. And the GFOA's requirement is that once your board adopts the financial aspect and components of your budget, you have, 60 or 90 days to transform it to the GFOA and develop all the other pieces to it, the readability piece, the public outreach piece, and the policy level pieces, and submit that. But each year, as we refine the process, we'll start bringing more of that to the board in the draft budgets and the final budgets.
Okay. Any other comments?
No.
Congratulations.
Hey, yeah.
That's nice. I was just going to ask, Jason, do you have any idea who the three independent finance review officers were?
I think it's anonymous. They're just the volunteers from around the country. They get copies of the budget and they review it independently.
Strange people who want to sit around and look at budgets.
They're all kinds.
I know.
That's what you do with your free time.
You don't want to know.
Okay, so we just accept the...
Would you like a motion to accept the...
Sure.
Hear, hear.
that's where.
It just doesn't accept.
Let's just go on record.
All right.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next up is item number six, the final draft fiscal year 2012 green business report. Jason?
Chair DePark. So last June, I gave this high-level overview of all the accomplishments that the agency had completed or initiated that were successful over fiscal year 11. And part of that was I asked the board if there was any other initiatives or projects you'd like the agency to undertake in fiscal year 12. And there were a few really good ideas, and the board accepted those and said incorporate these into the agency's work plan. And we did that, and one of them was preparing a green business report to highlight all of the green activities at the agency. And most of those led to the agency receiving the Marin County green business certification that we've had for about 5 or 6 years now. So we brought that revised work plan to the board with the green business report activity in it that was adopted by the board in July of last year. Then in the fall, our management team started to talk about how we're going to construct this report, and we decided to use the template of our performance metric report, which is a report that's included in the consent calendar each month. So we started with that, and we identified 5 different areas for the report, and we then brainstormed and refined different activities within each area. We defined them, we developed the metrics, and we brought that first draft document to the board at the November meeting. We received a lot of positive comments, feedback from the board, and made some revisions during the holidays. We refined the definitions, you know, made a little more readable. We looked at the metrics, made sure they made sense, made some adjustments there. We added a recommendation from the board, which is including the pesticide herbicide item to Table 3. And a more recent addition was based on a comment from alternate Commissioner Sullivan at last month's meeting. He had a really nice positive comment about the agency and suggested that we should highlight, you know, how much energy we produce on site and how much electricity we save by producing energy. You kind of tie that to the receiving the commercial food waste in the near future and the fats, oils, and grease, and the addition of the biogas and extra electricity we'll produce from those resources. So on page, I believe it's 4, there's a new area on table 5 there. And it's item 5 called energy generation, and that's based on Commissioner Sullivan's comments. So there's a little description there. Then we talk about how much biogas we generated, how much natural gas we purchased, and then we'll determine how much electricity did we not have to purchase by being a co-generator, and what's that savings, and how much electricity we saved by using biogas as a fuel. So over the next, you know, couple months, we'll be refining those calculations. It gets pretty complicated because you have to analyze your PG&E bills throughout the year and look at how much energy you bought during the peak period, non-peak period, park peak period, what were the demand charges, and calculate out, you know, a kilowatt hour for each of those periods. But that was a good addition, I thought. So tonight, this is just before the board. We mentioned in November, we'd be bringing back the revision in May, and this will be a fiscal year annual report, and we'll either bring it to the August or September meetings, whichever makes the most sense in terms of, you know, if meetings canceled or if what's on the agenda. So this is just for presentation of the board, and I can receive any final comments you have on it that we could incorporate into the final report.
Commissioner Hart.
As is often the case when you do reports and you do a little cutting and pasting and, oh, let's see if we can edit this so this will all fit on one page and so forth and so on, little things end up dangling like prepositions whatnot.
Yeah.
So I
you have some edits for me?
Yes.
Okay. I'll accept those, and thank you very much.
Any other comments?
Nothing substantive, just edits.
None of it has to do with other than I'm sure that there was not the intention that we were having people generate some form of waste product. It was the people were bringing in something that had been generated, and that's the only substantive thing, but it was kind of an unintentional reference. You'll not
I'll see
no one will mind.
Oh, that good.
I'd like to see the question.
All right, any other comments or any other suggestions for changes?
That's it, I appreciate it, I appreciate the comments.
Anyone from the public who wants to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. You've got all your recommendations, so go forward, Jason.
Yeah.
Do we need an action?
I don't think so. I think this was just a discussion item.
Discussion.
We need to capture comments.
Suggested changes. Okay, next up is item number 7, the sludge thickening project consulting selection process.
Okay. Thank you, Chair DePauw. So this is a project that's in our capital improvement program, and it is scheduled to start this year. So the first activity whenever we start a capital project is we begin the consultant selection process, and we usually come to the board for larger projects and you talk about the project a little bit, explain what the different phases are, and look for authorization from the board to begin the process to select the engineering design consultant. So that's what we're presenting tonight. So in terms of background, the agency has a sludge thickening system for our secondary solids, which are mainly microorganisms. And this system contains two open air tanks and a lot of supporting equipment, pumps and air compressors and piping and so forth. And all of this equipment is past its service life, requires a lot of maintenance. Spare parts are harder to find. And we've been planning to replace this equipment for a few years now and decided that fiscal year 14 would be a good year to replace it. So that means this fiscal year we need to develop a request for a proposal document, identify qualified consultants that have done this type of engineering design work before for wastewater agencies, send them the RFP, review and evaluate their proposals, select the most qualified consultant, and then prepare a professional services agreement for the design engineering services, negotiate the scope of work and the fee, and all of that gets bundled into a professional services agreement, and we bring that to the board for consideration of approval. So this is just a board authorization to begin that process. In terms of schedule, generally, I would say that we would probably have the RFP out to the consulting firms in the next month to month and a half, maybe 2 months. Then by the end of the summer, we should have the most qualified firm selected. And then sometime during the fall, we would have this professional service agreement to the board for review and consideration. Then if that's approved, we would start the design work, and that may take, you know, 6, 8 months, maybe even a year, depending on the complexity of the design. We don't think it should be too complex. And then construction would start several months after the design was completed. So staff's recommendation is to authorize the staff to prepare the design services proposal for the project and to select a qualified consultant.
Okay. Any comments? Commissioner Johnson.
Yes. It says that the tanks are not covered. You just referred to them as being open air. And are the rotary drum thickener system, are they also open air? Or does part of this cost include some kind of enclosure? Because the picture of a potential installation shows that it's an indoor type of application. So I was wondering, is there
The rotary drum thickener is a contained unit. So you could put that unit outside. But what we're thinking just conceptually is that once we remove all the supporting equipment from an indoor space, and that's the equipment for the dissolved air flotation tanks in that first picture, that there may be enough room, maybe not, to put those thickeners in a room. But if there's not, we could put them outside in the large space where the tanks are being removed from.
Do they last longer if they're inside?
Well, can I just finish up? Which is that what do you do in the meantime if you're actually removing the prior installation and putting in the same location the new process?
It's staged.
Do you have a workaround in the meantime to use?
Yeah, that'll all be figured out during the design process. But generally the way it works is you would remove one tank and its supporting equipment. You would install the thickener and its, you know, supporting equipment. You'd make the connections to it, and then you would start it up. And once it was operating properly, then you would remove the second tank and its equipment. It's like any project we have here where we have to replace equipment and with new equipment. Usually we have redundant equipment, and things are staged and sequenced in a way, and that sequencing is pretty much, you know, vetted and designed by a team which consists of the design engineer and consultant and the key stakeholders at the agency.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hartzell, any other questions?
Nah, this is just for going out for the consultant.
Any other comments? Anybody from the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Do I have a motion to authorize the general manager?
So moved.
A motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. Any further discussion? I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Is that all six?
What the
yes.
Sludge thing.
Motion carries unanimously. Next up is a revised 10-year budget, 10-year capital improvement program for the fiscal year 13 budget. Jason, if you have a PowerPoint for us.
Yeah. So just a little background. So last month we had this before the board, and this was the two enclosures in your packet. So there's this 10-year CIP enclosure, then there's this fiscal year 13 budget enclosure. This 10-year CIP enclosure we had last month, and due to, you know, we got to a pretty late hour, we discussed it briefly, and the board suggested that maybe we postpone it to May if we didn't need to make a decision that night. So we agreed. We thought that was fine. So what we've done is we've created a presentation which starts with the 10-year CIP, then flows into the budget. So it's like both these agenda items together. But just to note that there's three additions to this CIP document that are new over the last month. But before I say that, the Finance Committee did meet in early April and review the fiscal year 13 projects that I'm going to talk about, and just generally what's in this CIP and, you know, the overall 10-year cost projections and funding, you know, requirements and shortfalls. And then on May 2nd, the Finance Committee also met, and in addition to reviewing the fiscal year 13 budget operating and expenditure components, they reviewed the three additions to the CIP. And alternate Commissioner Miggs from Ross Valley Sand did attend that Finance Committee meeting and contributed to the discussion. It was good to have her there. So the first page of this staff report, item 8, has the three additions. So just real briefly, the first one is that, and this is based on a discussion we had last month on a separate agenda item, there was a general discussion about the two sections of the main wastewater interceptors that bring the wastewater to the plant, which is the San Rafael interceptor, 45-inch, and there's a underground vault in front of the plant, so there's a section from that vault to the CMSA treatment facility that in our JPA agreement, CMSA is required to maintain that, even though it's still owned by San Rafael Sanitation. Then there's a very similar underground vault structure on land that's owned by Department of Corrections across Sir Francis Drake from the Remillard, Larkspur's Remillard Pond, and that's where the San Quentin Force Main ties into the 54-inch Ross Valley Interceptor. From that junction point to CMSA, CMSA is required to maintain that piece of pipe. And that's jointly owned by Corte Madera, Larkspur, and Ross Valley Sanitary. So we thought, well, it'd be prudent to include an element within our CIP where we would go out and inspect those two sections of line that were required to maintain the JPA. So we included about $105,000 in fiscal year 15, which is the 30-year life of those pipes, 30 years of service, I mean, and we'll go out and do the inspection work. So at a GPA manager meeting, I brought up this item to the managers. They thought it was a great idea that CMSA did this inspection work, and several months before we actually implement this, we'll get together with the GPA managers and ask them, since we're implementing this work and bringing in a contractor to do the inspections and probably shutting down the collection systems to, you know, facilitate the inspections, should CMSA just, and this contractor, just inspect the entire pipeline beyond, you know, the part we're able to maintain? And the managers thought that was a good idea. So the cost may increase in the future depending on, or maybe just a different funding mechanism. But this is enough money for CMSA to do our, you know, required maintenance inspection work. The second item is we have this cogeneration maintenance project that's scheduled for this fall. And what we've included in the budget is about $125,000 to procure the electricity to provide, to supply it to the agency while the engine generator is off-site and various relocation works happening inside that room. And the third item is associated with charging staff compensation and benefit to capital projects when they're working on specific selected capital projects. We've been doing that since 2006, once we issued the revenue bonds. And this is the last year that we'll have the bond proceeds to charge against. So one suggestion we had for the finance committee was, well, how about we just continue charging the staff time when they work on the capital projects to the CIP? It doesn't affect the agency's revenues at all. It's just how you account for that staff time. The two benefits to that, the minor benefit is that then once the project's done, we have an accurate project cost because it has all the consultant fees, construction, plus the staff time, which we don't track now in terms of the project. So we'll have that information. And secondly, we're capitalizing that expense, so it helps with the debt service coverage ratio calculations, so we can meet our 1.25 ratio. So the committee thought that was a good idea to include that, like a placeholder of one full-time equivalent from fiscal year 14 to 22. So that's been included in the CIP also. So with that, I can run it. I can start the presentation here. And so this is, you know, two presentations. We'll start with the CIP, and then we'll there'll be a little break there, and then we'll flow into the budget. And you could, of course, ask me questions at any slide. I'll try to answer them. Or one of our staff here that know a lot more about some of these items than I do could help out. So the presentation, so we have the CIP program there, is, you know, what we're planning this year and what's the 10-year budget look like. Then we have the fiscal year 13 operating budget, the revenues, expenses. We have the financial forecast with a couple of different displays we look at, what we look at last year, and then some changes this year. And then have a general discussion about future funding for operations and capital work. So in terms of the expenses for the CIP, you notice the document here. This document is a new format. This last year was the first format, and we have two, you know, 11 by 17 sheets with all the detailed information, all the project accounts by fiscal year, the project delivery method. Then we have one-page descriptions for the larger capital projects or projects that have multiple phases or last multiple years. And then we have smaller descriptions on the back table for smaller capital projects, maintenance projects, and routine repair and rehabilitation activities. So the first quarter of this calendar year, our capital improvement project team, which is a new team that we formed last year, comprised of the listed work groups here, they spend quite a bit of time revising the CIP. So, you know, they looked at definitions to make sure the definitions made sense and they captured what the project was. They looked, assessed, you know, the condition assessment activities over the past year to determine, okay, are these particular projects we're planning over the next few years, do they make sense, or do we need to reprioritize them? Do we need to reschedule them? What should we be doing in fiscal year 13? They looked at the cost estimates for a lot of the larger projects and some of the maintenance projects and revised those and tightened up the estimates. And they added the project delivery method to these big tables. And that is, does CMSA self-perform the work? Do we hire a contractor under purchase order? Do we formally bid the project? And we have procedures to support all those different project delivery methods. So now we have them identified in the CIP. And then, as I mentioned a moment ago, the Finance Committee has reviewed this a couple times. And I think they generally support the activities and the expenditures. So this is, you know, kind of a high-level look at fiscal year 13. So there's the salary benefits and the total costs in the four categories that we have in the CIP, number of projects. So we're looking at about $7 million estimated for this year. It's likely that we won't, you know, initiate all the projects that we think we're going to initiate. And right now, we're anticipating, as of July 1st, we'll have about $5.3 million in bond proceeds left from that 2006 issuance. So based on the $7 million projected budget, we'll be using all those proceeds. And then we'll be using restricted capital reserve funds to pay the balance of 13. There's a couple typos in the staff report. I mentioned unrestricted capital reserves, but what we do is we use the restricted first. So here's just, you know, kind of a brief overview of some of the bigger projects with some pictures. So one is we completed a study. Kroll Engineers did this last year where we looked at various concrete surfaces and coating materials in the plant, and essentially did an assessment. There were various areas that were, that staff knew about and that Corollo identified that we did core samples on where we need to do some concrete rehabilitation work or do some new coatings. So all of the recommendations from Corollo, those were peer-reviewed by a structural engineer in San Rafael, Roy Anderson, and he agreed with most of Corollo's assessment. There were a few things that he thought we could do a little more cost-effectively. So we've integrated those projects into the CIP for those fiscal years, and this year we'll be doing some coating work in our headworks. There's a room where we have an odor scrubber where the concrete's in bad, it's not in very good condition because chlorine solution spilled on the floor over the years and migrated through the concrete, and we're coating one of the chlorine contact tank walls. This is the cost estimate for 13, and there's just a couple pictures there. So here's the wall coatings are peeling off, and here's some, you know, concrete that needs to be looked at up here.
How old is that coating? You put it on how long ago?
That wall coating is original. At least I think it's original. It's been here since 93 when I started. The second project, and you're familiar with this because we've talked about it in the past a few times, is what we call the aeration blower replacement project. And the agency has four of these blowers. They provide all of the compressed air for our four aeration tanks. Two of the blowers are being replaced this year with these new, they're called turbo blowers. They're variable speed, much more energy efficient. And the other two blowers have been, we've assessed their condition, had an expert look at that, and we've done condition assessment rehabilitation work on them. So they'll serve as backups. So this contract has been awarded back in September by the board to Western Water. And remember, that was a project where we had a construction estimate of like 800 and something thousand, and the low bid was 571. So we saved quite a bit of money on that. The blower submittals, I think they've been approved, and they should be delivered in June. That's the latest, you know, I've heard. And the project should be wrapped up in August. Here's a picture of the aeration tank. So the blowers sit in this room. They compress the air. They send it through piping into a distribution system in these tanks. And all the microorganisms there, they need that compressed air in fine bubble form that they pull into their, you know, into their cell walls, and they use the oxygen in their metabolic processes, and they eat all the organics and the wastewater. Here's the four existing, I think they're Hoffman blowers. So two have been rehabilitated, two are being replaced. And this is a Neuros blower, and that is the brand that was approved this, through the civil review process.
Is it quieter system?
Yeah, I understand it's quieter, more energy efficient, and you can variable, you can change the speed on the outlet side based on dissolved oxygen demand. All these, you had to throttle the air intake at the constant speed. So
would the variable speed also use less power?
Yeah, that's right. Corollo engineers estimated a 20 to 30% conservative cost savings, energy savings.
Wow.
Then this is a project that was moved up a few years in the CIP. I believe it was scheduled for fiscal year 15, but based on some condition assessments of this big tank, there was a lot of corrosion on the inside, and we figured, well, we need to move it up. And what this is a reclaimed water system, so water from the end of the treatment plant that's chlorinated, it gets removed, goes underground into our galleries, goes through some pumping systems, and it is used at various locations around the plant. Cools the engine generator, it's used for washdown water for the tanks, it is used for landscape irrigation. We provide some additional disinfection to that water, and we transport over to the Larkspur Remillard Pond. So right now we've sent out an RFP for design consultants, so we should be receiving proposals in the near future. That's the budget, and here's a picture of what all that equipment is. So here's the tank. It looks really nice on the outside, but the inside has a glass lining that's, you know, worn down through erosion in places, and there's some serious corrosion in areas. So the water comes through these reclaimed water pumps, goes through this pipe up here through a flow meter, and then this tank acts as a kind of a surge suppressor. So we need to replace this tank. We're going to replace these two and another pump, some strainers and some piping and valves and things like that. Next is the major maintenance for our cogeneration system, and that has several components to the project. The most significant is this major overhaul, and this is recommended by the engine manufacturer, which is Waukesha, and they recommend this at 40,000 hours, which is about 7 years. You recall that we replaced our original cogeneration engine back in 2004-05 timeframe. So now we have to remove this engine, send it to a repair facility for the overhaul work. We're getting bids right now from three different repair facilities for that major maintenance. While the engine's out, getting overhauled, we're going to relocate, you know, some equipment in the room, and I'll show that in a minute. The budget for that is $370,000. So here's the engine. You guys have seen this many times. Here's the generator that's coupled to it, and this is an exhaust gas heat exchanger. So all the exhaust gas goes through this. It's cooled off before the gas is vented to the atmosphere. Here's another picture of it. So you see it's right in the doorway. So when we have to remove the engine, we couldn't get it out. So we figured we should now move this over here in line with these columns, so in the future we could get the engine in and out. And then in 10 years from now, when we have a new cogeneration system that will replace this one, it'll be easy access. Then there's this expansion tank in here.
Wait, can you go back to that? So in 10 years from now, if you're going to take it out again, wouldn't you want to maybe at that time also replace the gas heat exchanger at that time too? I mean, is that really there?
Well, this needs to move over here so the engine can come out and get put back in. And then we'll leave it over there permanently. And then in 10 years or in 15 years, whenever we need to replace that cogeneration system, could be because airborne emissions requirements, other drivers could affect that. We may replace it with another engine generator. We may replace it with microturbines or some other technology. But we'll use the same type of approach that we used back in 2003 and 2004, as we'll evaluate all the current technologies at the time.
No, I'm talking about how many times are you actually going to need to get around the heat exchanger?
You're going to move it.
We're going to move it permanently right here. So after this one time, there'll probably be one more time that we'll have to take the engine out for a major overhaul in 7 years.
That's what I was asking.
Okay. Then if this, you know, has a lot of life left and is well maintained, maybe another 7 years before you take it out and have to replace it. Yeah, so it'll move here permanently. And then there's this expansion tank that's wedged between these two roof beams. You know, we've learned that that's undersized. You know, Waukesha has been out here, their representatives, and said, yeah, it should be quite a bit bigger. Sometimes it spills out and vents, you know, coolant down below. So we've figured out that we need to install a larger tank. The only location, really, is to put it on the roof. So we've got to get a bigger tank, put it on the roof, run the piping up to the roof. So that's part of the project, too.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. Next time we have a plant tour, we'll go in here and take a look at this. And it's just amazing how much piping there is in this room.
There's piping everywhere.
There's no room for it.
That's right. Then there's a lot of different control panels and PLCs for the engine. So another aspect of the project is we may look at making some efficiencies to the control systems, maybe consolidating some of them, going with more of an open-based control system versus some of the proprietary. But we need to kind of scope that out still. So that's that project, cogeneration maintenance. Here's the sledge thickening improvements. We just talked about that. And here's some of the pictures you saw. So, Commissioner Johnson, this is the room that I was talking about where all of this is going to be removed because all of this supports these two tanks. So this could either go out here, two of these can go out here, probably take, you know, a small footprint, or depending on the size that we select based on, you know, the flow rates from the secondary clarifiers, they may fit in this room. That's something we'll figure out in design. But it's all stainless steel construction, so it could be in the room or out of the room. Then the digester improvement fog fluid energy facility project, that's currently underway. I think most of you are pretty familiar with the status of that. Total project cost is $7.5 million. The budget for this year to finish up the project is estimated to be $2.7. We're anticipating the construction work to be completed February of 2013. And here's some pictures of. So this is the fog facility. So on this side is the underground tank. So the plant road is up here. So fog deliveries can come, pump into the tank. Food waste can come over here and dump into these hatches that are open. So everything's inside this area of the tank, well mixed. And this is where the equipment is under installation right now. Here's the digester that's currently being retrofitted. Probably in the next couple months, there'll be the new dome on the digester, a nice olive green dome that sticks up a little higher than this one.
Is that to disguise it? To make it look thinner?
So when you drop by an intersection, it'll look like a tree.
What we did is, you know, we
it's camouflage.
It's like a ladybug or something.
Essentially, that's what it is, because this company, Dyster, that makes these membrane covers, they can make them in tie-dye color, anything you want. So we were looking at, well, you know, we have these
rainbow ones to match the rainbow tunnels.
Why don't you bury a couple of cell towers in there and get some ribbon?
Yeah, that too. They can make them look like trees.
Really, the color was selected by my colleague over in the planning department in the city of Santa Fe, because we need to get a planning design review permits due to the aesthetics impact. So he came out one day, and we got, you know, various color cards of different shades of green, and he picked the one that matched best with the hillsides. So we said, that sounds great. So we picked out the color, and Dicer's making this giant cover in that shade.
I'm so proud.
You don't think Puce would have been better?
I defer to the planning director.
That's right.
This is some equipment here. So these are the new mixing pumps for the digesters. They're being installed right now. So you have two pumps and this big 18-inch diameter piping to move the sludge in and out for mixing. And these are the new biogas purification tanks. And these are below Anderson Drive. So this is the 10-year CIP. And so the cost estimate for all 10 years is $34.8 million. Right now we're projecting funding to be at about $27.3. And here's the sources. So we have, you know, bond proceeds, what we estimate we'll have at the beginning of the fiscal year. Here's what we have in restricted reserves now, unrestricted reserves. And this is the debt service coverage capital funding, where we get about $1.1 million each year. So over the 10-year life, assuming that everything stays the same, and we implement everything when we think we are, and that's the real cost, that's a shortfall. But as you all know, things change each year as you update the CIP.
And so, how many, I don't remember what the totals were, but is that basically the last 2 years, 3 years? How many actual end years of that offhand about?
It doesn't work out as clean as that.
Okay.
Because this is $1.1 million that comes in every year.
So
you get to a certain point, you might have a big project, and you don't have the funding, but there's $1.1 million in the outer years. You know, I'll show that in a minute.
Okay.
So that was, you know, just an overview of the CIP. So if there's any questions you had on that, I can answer them, or anything on these documents that staff could note and incorporate into the final revised CIP.
Commissioner Boyle, you commented at the beginning that you might be able to get all this accomplished this year, but this is what you're putting forward.
Yeah.
That's not a negative. I mean, maybe I say my concern about that is, at some point, we're all going to have to look at our charges in order to support the possible increase in the fees that we pay here. So I think we want to control as best we can our capital improvements so we don't inflate them. And we go ahead and go out to voters and get money when we don't really need it. So you're going to have to be very careful about that.
You know, I appreciate that comment, because I had that discussion with the team lead and the team members, in that we need to budget very tight when we develop these budgets, not really include a lot of contingency, and that we don't try to have more in a given year than we can really accomplish.
Right.
We need to be very conservative about what we plan to do in a certain year, because what I've learned in my 18 years here is that it's easy to put it all down on paper. We're going to do all these projects, and things take a lot longer than you anticipate most of the time.
Have you been tracking what you budget versus what you complete, what the percent complete is?
Generally, what we do is we track those expenditures in each account, you know, every month. And at the end of the fiscal year, once we close out the books, we have what we call a period 13 report that shows all the actuals for every account for the last year, you know, with audited figures. So we have a lot of that information. And it turns out on the CIP that, you know, for the major projects in the revenue bond program, we generally are on target with moving those forward. A lot of the smaller maintenance level projects, we haven't been hitting, you know, like 80 or 90% targets. And it's because we've learned that, you know, it takes a long time to procure things sometimes, to get the bids in, and the schedules usually get expanded as you start working on things. But it's a process, and we have this new team now. A lot more people are thinking about it. Their ideas are coming to the table. And each year, we'll just refine how we develop the capital budget for that year.
The other question I had, I don't think you said anything about this failed one-year full repair to the asphalt slab. What's that all about?
Which one is that again? That's the...
This is page number.
Oh, is it
failed one-year full repair asphalt slab?
Oh yeah. So what this is wish I had a diagram here.
There's a picture.
Well, here's a picture here of our maintenance facility, and there's a covered parking bay, and over that covered parking bay, you know, at the ground level, there's great concrete beams and columns supporting it to the piles. But there's no concrete slab between it. There's just asphalt. So what's happened over the years, you know, this is all, it's all built on like 100 feet of bay mud. So that bay mud just consolidates, and the asphalt keeps creeping down. So we went in every couple of years, and you have to grind out the edges and put a new layer of asphalt. Gets heavier, consolidates more. So the first phase of this project is that we're going to remove all that asphalt, and we're going to tie in reinforcing steel and just pour a nice slab across there so we don't ever have to address the consolidating clay issue again and repaving.
So you have more subsidence under the slab that's suspended over the top of it.
Yeah, the slab's going to be designed as a kind of a bridge structure. So the ground could keep subsiding over it, and it'll be able to handle a certain amount of load. We'll have two mats of rebar going each direction. Structural engineer will design it.
One word, sinkhole.
Pardon me?
One word, sinkhole.
We've had lots of sinkholes in those bays that we've had to repair. Okay, I can move into the
button. Any other comments?
Well, I don't know if it's part of the next set, but I had questions about the pond.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So when Ford put it in back in 2007, right? Ford had that contract.
Yeah.
I know we had some trouble. I think on the leeward side of it, on the east side, and we had trouble. I think we had to put down the geotextile fiber and some other layers at what they perceived as the base of this thing when they brought up the east side. But there was some instability issues, I recollect.
There were, you know, I don't remember all the details, but there were some areas that the material wasn't as stable, and the geotech had to get involved and, you know, design appropriate, you know, repair so that it met the design intent.
For a certain amount of time, it's going to keep...
It's going to keep consolidating, and the way clay consolidates, so you look at a curve, it kind of goes like this. So most of the consolidation is like in the first 10 years, and then it always consolidates forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. And so most of the consolidation that's happened around, you know, CMSA has happened, but there will always be continued consolidation. It'll just be a little slower. But what we did is there's this liner around the pond, not at the bottom, but around the side, the berm walls inside of the pond. We predicted that these walls would keep consolidating down, and at some point we're going to have to go and build them up again to maintain the storage volume of that pond. So this Hypalon liner material, it's longer than it needs to be, and we rolled it up and we put it in a trench around the top of the berm. So if it does settle, and when it does, we can excavate it out and we could pull it in the middle of the pond and build up the berm, and we can lay it on the sides. So it saves a lot of construction cost.
Right, but that's still a bay mud zone.
Oh yeah, it's 120 feet of bay mud at that east end of the plant.
Right. So my whole thing is that we knew what we were getting into when we put the pond down. We need a place to put, you know, wastewater if we need to.
Yeah.
That's the most likely place, and we'll just be continuing to maintain it as it stabilizes.
That's correct. Okay. We actually have some dollars, you know, to build up the berm. You know, I think it's in fiscal year 17. Mm-hmm. But depending on you, we'll survey it every few years, and if it's not consolidating very much, you know, we can keep pushing that capital project into the future.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Anybody from the public?
Seeing none.
Okay, so here's the draft fiscal year 13 budget. Can you help me say that? So this is really kind of a high-level overview, very similar to what we presented last year for the first time. Okay, so the Finance Committee get together, as I mentioned, on May 2nd, reviewed, you know, the draft budget. If there was any, you know, major suggested changes by the committee. The format's similar to the adopted, you know, fall budget. And as I mentioned, we'll be transforming it to GFOA format, hopefully submitting that in August sometime, and then we'll provide copies for the board. And for fiscal year 13, the good news is that revenues are covering operating expenses. And then, as we've talked about in the past, any operating surplus funds, you know, reserves. And the agency has a financial reserve policy that's been adopted by the board and amended by the board in the past. And there's various, you know, accounts, restricted, unrestricted, in that policy. And there's methodologies of how surpluses go into the different accounts and how the different accounts are used. But in general, any operating surpluses we have, the first transfer of funds is to the operating reserve account, and then the balance goes into an unrestricted capital reserve account. So that's kind of how we move things around. We've talked about that for the last few years. So here's kind of the overview of the budget. So we look at, here's what we had in the current budget. So we're looking at, you know, $10 million in revenues. This is the expenses, and we were going to have this surplus. So here's the actuals, or what we're projecting as the actuals. There could be some changes here. We got 9.4 in revenues, 9 in expenses, surplus of 400,000. We were happy to see that. So 93.8 moves to the operating reserve to maintain a quarter of our annual operating budget in reserve, and then the balance goes to the unrestricted capital. And here's the shortfalls on the budget end. From budget to actuals, we have a $607,000 shortfall on revenues. 736 of this is due to the EDU count reduction in San Quentin, but then we had some increased revenues on septage haulers and a couple other minor areas. Then here's the proposed budget. We have 9.72 million in revenues, 9.52 million in expenses. Here's the surplus, and here's how that surplus flows to the two reserve accounts. Any questions on this? We'll get into the details of the revenues and expenses in a minute here. Revenues. So the budget that you all have, it's based on EDU counts, like we talked about last month. And it uses the fiscal year 12 actuals that were provided by the JPA member agencies in March and that we verified. It uses this 42,000 EDU count figure, which is a 7,500 count reduction from last year. And most of that reduction is from San Quentin moving now to a contract revenue versus EDU-based revenue. So the net revenues, as we talked about, is what we allocate to the JPA member agencies. So we have our gross revenue, and we subtract out contract revenues, program revenues, interest revenues, other things. We end up with the net, and that's what's allocated to the members. And right now, that's allocated by EDUs. And the EDU rates is increased from 169 per EDU, which is the current year, to 175, and that's based on a 3.1% increase. And the board approved these rate increases, you know, a few years ago. And we sent letters to the member agencies informing them that this has been adopted by the board. The revenue side, we assume no connection fees or capacity charges, and the interest earnings have been reduced again. We haven't met our targets for the last, you know, few years. And, you know, the debt service side, the revenue is, total revenue is $5.8 million, and that's allocated also by EDU count. And here's the regional charge or the operating revenue picture. So here's the service charges, and you see here's the shortfall due to the EDU count reduction in San Quentin. Here's the proposed budget. This is the net revenue that we allocate to the members, this one here. Contract services. This includes a San Quentin contract. And what we did, and this is explained in the staff report, is we took this $1.2 million in contract revenue from San Quentin. We took the 4,000 EDUs that they have, and we used that in the debt service calculation. So $465,000 of that $1.2 million is for debt service revenue. Then the balance, which is $750,000, goes into contract revenues. So this contract includes the fats, oils, and grease contracts with local agencies, the pollution prevention contract with Los Colinas, the San Quentin contract, and also the Corte Madera pump station contract. Then we have program services, which are the countywide education program and the safety director program, primarily reimbursements, and it seems there's overhead for managing those. Interest, big little reduction there. Inspection, permitting fees, and just miscellaneous other. So you see here's the total, and which is a negative 2.9% reduction. And this is budget to budget, not budget to actual. Any questions on the revenue piece?
Commissioner Johnson.
Yes, under the contract services, if San Quentin is $100,000 a month, is only what's in here the amount that's allocated for treatment, not the debt?
Yeah.
Is that why that not over $1.2 million?
Yeah. $750,000 about of that is from San Quentin. The rest is from the other sources. Okay, the expense side, so we're looking at a 1.1% increase in operating expenses, and here's, you know, the factors here. So as we've talked about in the last couple months, you know, the CalPERS pension contribution, the employer contribution rate's increasing to 22.7%. All of the employees will be receiving a 2.6% compensation cost of living adjustment as pursuant to contracts the board has with the unrepresented employees and with the SEIU bargaining unit. We're estimating medical benefits to continue increasing. We're now being charged standby charges by PG&E, and I briefed the board on that, you know, I think last month. So that's in the budget. And we've transferred the disposal of media and the purchase of the media for biogas purification systems from an account in the CIP to operations. We felt that was more of a operational expense versus a capital expense, so that's transferred over. And then because of the arbitration with Ross Valley, we've increased the legal service expenses, and the Regional Water Board should be adopting our new MPDS permit June or July, and that has some additional permit testing in it for chronic toxicity and nutrients and enterococcus. So then a couple notes here, these are the same as last year, that under GASB 45, you know, we're funding in a CalPERS trust fund all of the our annual required contribution for unfunded future liability for medical. And our staff did a very good job trying to hold their individual accounts flat or decreasing where they could. These are the numbers.
Didn't I read someplace in here that the NPDES
permit?
PDES permit costs were more than just during this next year. There was some in. It was more than just in the coming year, I thought it said someplace.
Yeah, it probably, I think what you're referring to is a note in the 10-year financial forecast section where we've included, you know, regulatory consulting costs at two different points in the forecast at five-year intervals because we're going to have to go through the process to renew our permit again. So we've just renewed it, and in 5 years we have to renew it again, then another 5 years we're going to renew it again. So there's generally been anywhere between, you know, $100,000 to $110,000 for those professional services.
I don't think that was it, but anyway, I'll look for it. Thank you.
Yeah, you can call me and we can talk about it. So these are the operating expenses. So there's a lot of information here. This is right out of the table in the staff reports. So you have what we had in the budget. You know what we're projecting right now. These numbers, you know, can change. Shortfalls or surpluses as of today, well, as of last week, and then the fiscal 13 budget. Full expense amount and the difference. And again, this is, you know, budget to budget, it's not budget to actual. Any questions on any of those items? Yes, question.
Regarding the PG&E standby charges.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember if you told us what the significance of that is. It's in terms of.
We're budgeting about $2,000 a month for the standby charge. And that's a charge that PG&E, you know, requires under the particular tariff that we have as a wastewater agency. So if we want to have a standby service. So if our cogeneration system went out, the diesel engine went out, and we couldn't generate power here, PG&E guarantees that we would receive so many kilowatt hours. So to have that guarantee from PG&E, pay an additional standby charge.
But in the past, they haven't charged us that.
Well, it's kind of a complicated situation. We were charged that until 2005 when we installed the new engine generator, and part of part of the administration of that project, there was a lot of dynamics going on. We had to get some a new interconnection agreement with PG&E, and they miscategorized our project as a new installation versus a replacement. And because of that, they said, well, since it's new, we're not going to charge it standby charge anymore. And we thought,
okay.
I don't even think we knew about it, because our PG&E bills are about this thick, and there's so many different line items and things. I don't think we even knew that. But then, just recently, I think it was 6 or 7 months ago, we started seeing that charge. So our staff contacted our PG&E representative and talked to him about it. He said, oh yeah, there's a standby charge, and we learned through the discussion with them that there was mischaracterization back in 2005 of the project, and PG&E said, well, we could charge you this other fee back then that would accrue. So we negotiated with them that we would just pay this back charge to the beginning of 2011 and continue forward with the standby charge and not pay all these other charges for those several years that was mischaracterized.
So if we don't, we don't have a right to have utility service if we need it, just like any other ratepayer. We have to have this special reservation system.
I can't tell you all the details associated with it, but uh-huh. Under the tariff we have, it's not a guarantee unless you pay the standby charge.
So it's like a privilege for the rate structure we have. Is that what you mean by the tariff?
Ken has a comment.
Yeah.
Briefly, Ken.
Under the tariff structure we're under, which is both a wastewater treatment plant and a cogenerator, so PG&E reserves generation capacity to be able to provide us what our cogenerator provides should that go down, like Jason said. And there's a capital cost and an operational cost of maintaining that generation capacity. That's been negotiated through the PUC, and based on our size, comes out to about $2,000 a month. The alternative charge that they could have charged us as a result of mischaracterizing our replacement as a new installation would have been something called a departing load charge, where they recapture the costs of their generation equipment to provide the load that a new self-sufficient installation is no longer going to require.
Interesting.
And under that rate structure, we would not have access to PG&E electricity unless we wanted to pay them about $5,000 or $6,000 a month. So it's in our favor to pay the $2,000.
You can't run
the extension cord. So they're basically trying to. They want to suppress alternate energy use. That's the message I heard as part of the background.
These charges they've been around forever.
I think they're penalizing you more than anything if you get off your current arrangement and try to provide the cogeneration. They'll make it available to you, but it'll be a little more.
Exactly. And, it's something that they've negotiated through the PUC. All the stakeholders have had their say, and the decision was made to go forward this way under this particular rate structure.
Thank you.
Yes, details for you. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate that. Okay. So here's the financial forecast, and that's the last document in the budget you all have. So this is what we looked at last year. And what we showed you last year is that here's the revenues, expenses, shortfalls each year, or surpluses, and the end-of-the-year balances for the operating reserve and capital reserve accounts. So we have this 3.1% EDU rate increase to fiscal year 15. So you see how the revenues and expenses, you see them, the surplus is getting smaller. These expenses are growing, at least based on the projections we used at that time.
Wait, so you said there was an EDU increase?
The board approved a EDU rate increase of 3.1% for 5 years. So that goes out to this year.
Oh, I thought you said count.
Okay. Yeah, this is based on a constant EDU count of like 54,000, whatever it was at that time. So this is what the reserves look like at that time. You see that from 12 to 15, you know, after the bond proceeds were exhausted, we're starting to draw down the capital reserve account. Then from 15 and 16, you know, expenses increase. We don't have a rate increase here, nothing planned away in the schedule. And we start drawing down the operating reserve to pay for basic operations, and we start using more of the capital reserve. So the critical year that we showed you all last May and June was in fiscal year 18, where we used most of the operating reserve and we're in the deficit on the capital reserve. And these are the critical years that we run out of money, in 19 and for operating, 17 for capital. So that's what we talked about last year. And the comment from the board was that this year we would talk about what we're going to do to address those shortfalls far out into the future. So now we've updated this forecast. So here's that note about the operating rate increase. The EDU count now has been reduced to this value. So San Quentin has been removed on the regional charge side. Of course, you know, we don't have much money in terms of revenue for capacity charges or interest. And this is what was a board comment last year that was included in the forecast I'm showing you here, is that in the fall, the food, energy, and fat oils and grease facility will be operational. We'll start receiving tipping fee revenues, and we'll start saving on natural gas, and we're figuring 25% each year increase. So that's built into the model. Then we had next year, all of the staff time, I mean cost, compensation, benefits that were charged to the bond proceeds, that would flow back into the operating account, increase those expenditures. But now with the finance committee's recommendation to keep most of that in the CIP, we're budgeting about one FTE for fiscal year 14 and 22. So now it'd be just a transfer of one back to operating versus two back to operating. And then we're just assuming minor expense increases from 2 to 4% in most of the other accounts. And then we're anticipating a CalPERS employer contribution of at least 1% next year based on, you know, what we talked about a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, the board administration reduction of the interest earnings from 7.75 to 7.5%. So then, of course, as you all know, there's lots of uncertainties when you're doing 10-year or even 5-year forecasts. There's what your interest earnings are going to be, what happens with healthcare premiums, employer contribution rate through CalPERS. You know, chemical costs have been pretty volatile over the last few years. And then, you know, far in the future, what happens with our new MPS permit. So this is what it looks like this year. So you see, and what's happened here is on the capital side, we're pretty much in the same position because of the rescheduling of projects, tighter cost estimating, savings on the aeration blower project. In fiscal year 18, which was the problem year, you know, last year we talked about, we're still around the same position, but we have a little more in capital reserves. So things just got allocated differently through the update. However, on the operating side, it's moved up almost 2 years, where our expenses are much greater than our revenues. And you see here we start having shortfalls. The shortfalls actually start happening in, I think, fiscal year 14. And they continue to happen. We start drawing down the operating reserve balance until this year we have about $38,000 in that account, and we're running big deficits. So capital is about the same place, but operating is about 2 years closer, and that's primarily due to the EDU count reduction of San Quentin and that lost revenue. So that's kind of what it looks like. And this is just really an excerpt from that 11 by 17 document that you all have. So this is, you know, what we discussed with the Finance Committee are different ways to provide funding for operation and capital in the future. And I think committee members can, you know, help me out with what we discussed. But generally what the committee thought was, and we need to figure out a plan in the near future, communicate it to the member agencies, and then start bringing in the additional revenues so that way we're not in a big hole in fiscal year 17 and 18. So my suggestion tonight for the board is to direct staff and the Finance Committee to develop alternatives on how we can avoid these funding deficits out in the future. we'll do that over the summer. We'll meet with the JPA managers and present the alternatives and get their feedback on it, and then we'll bring all that information back to the board with the plan to for the board to select one of these approaches or a hybrid of an approach by the end of this calendar year, so we can document it and we could send it to the member agencies. So that's pretty much the end of the budget presentation, but that's the suggestion that I had tonight based on our finance committee meeting. Commissioner DuPont and Hartzell, anything else you'd like to add to?
No, I think it summarizes a pretty strong directive to get creative.
Any other comments from the board members? Any suggestions, Commissioner Johnson?
Yes, on this jumbo drawing spreadsheet that's in the budget packet at the very end.
Yeah.
So the part that's in red down at the bottom.
Pardon me?
The red?
Yeah.
Is that?
That's the
that
short.
That's what you're talking about in here?
Yeah, that's where those are the unrestricted operating reserve and capital improvement program reserve, and that's when we start drawing those down. You can see in section 4 the money transferring out, and then you see the deficit on the operating side in fiscal year 17, 38,000 left there. And the capital, actually, you know, one comment I had is that for the final budget, that little capital red block will probably yellow block.
One over.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? So the Finance Committee will be addressing this.
Yeah, does the board want to have a motion to provide some direction to the staffing committee so we can start scheduling meetings? And
you want us to move that? Direct staff and Finance Committee to develop alternatives this summer and come back to the board.
In the fall?
In the fall.
Sure. Okay, that's a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there, before I call the question, anybody from the public have any comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll call it back. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I do want to just add something real quick that I believe General Manager Dow and I had a conversation at least 3, maybe 4 years ago about how we have never had a specific capital plan funding program. It's all just been little dribs and drabs, transfer from here, transfer from there, leftovers from the bond. There's never actually been a funding plan for it, partly because the agency was fairly new, didn't need new capital equipment. And when it started doing it, the bond came along, had a little mini windfall in it. So there's never really been this how to fund capital projects ongoingly as a overall plan that we've developed.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about that. That's right.
Now it's,
we'll develop a plan.
We need to.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take a little 5-minute break. Come back. CMSA regional charge allocation method alternatives for the fiscal year 13 budget that we brought over from last month's meeting. Jason, give a quick overview.
Sure. So at last month's board meeting, the Finance Committee had a recommendation that the board select the 3-year flow average allocation method for the fiscal 13 budget. And then after the agency collects 1 year of strength data from the satellite collection agencies, that the board consider using the flow and strength-based allocation method for fiscal year 14. There wasn't any action taken by the board on that item. And then when we were discussing a item later during the meeting, you know, several board members said, well, how about we bring that regional charge item back to the May meeting for further discussion, and also include in the table, which is page 2 of the staff report, in addition to the percentages that each agency would have under each allocation method, show the expenses for CMSA for each agency. So I told the board that we could definitely hold this over. We'll bring it back in a month because we'd be developing the fiscal year 13 budget and would be determining the total revenues, net revenues, and then we could take the net revenues and allocate those to the members using those four alternate methods. So that's what I show in the table.
Okay.
So that expense under each name, is that for the full year?
Yeah.
What you're saying?
Okay. And that's just for the regional charge. And the regional charge can be allocated a few different ways in the JPA. The debt service can only be allocated using the EDU method.
Okay. Yeah, Commissioner Jones.
Is there a reason that this decision needs to be made now?
I'm sorry, Marcia.
I said, is there a reason that this decision needs to be made now? Versus
it coordinates with the budget. That's up
versus closer versus to the time when we're actually budgeting for that year.
Well, this
is just on the agenda because the board asked to be on tonight's agenda. But I agree with what Chair DePauw said, that if the board were to ask CMSA to use a different allocation method, that it should be in May-June timeframe so that we can include it in our final budget and we can communicate it to the member agencies.
Because if we change the methodology to the flow-based, it will be applicable as of this next billing cycle.
July, yeah. The first quarter invoices right. That would go out in July, the beginning of the fiscal year. That's right.
For the 13, 12-13.
That's correct.
So,
Commissioner Johnson.
I do not believe that we have enough strength information just from using the month of March in order to make a statistically accurate allocation. If that incorporating strength into the formula, it's just not a long enough time period. Plus, it's during a rainy time.
He said that would not be incorporated for a few years until more data is developed on that one, right?
That's what the Finance Committee recommended when we talked about it.
Well, it's
it's just shown for information.
And then if it's only based on volume, then you're not doing it based on correct strength data, and the flow is disproportionate for the Ross Valley ratepayers. Ross Valley ratepayers would end up paying a higher share just based on volume than they would if strength was included.
Are you saying because the month of March is a heavy inflow period?
No, I'm saying, on the last part, I'm saying it's because I believe, without any statistical information available, that both the San Rafael District and the Corte Madera districts have a greater commercial use than the Ross Valley District, which is 95% to 96% residential, and that commercial use generates more strength factor, and to not include that, it's not like we all have the same residential versus commercial proportions of use in our districts. It's clearly...
So it costs more to treat wastewater with a higher strength factor.
Right, correct.
So the strength factor for the two other agencies will be spread out across all three agencies?
Well, once we develop the statistical data.
I think the Finance Committee generally agreed with what you just stated, and that's why they recommended that the agency continue gathering strength data through March of 2013, and that we bring the revised calculations back to the committee and then possibly to the board, the committee recommendation, once we have that strength information for the entire wet weather year.
Is that the true statement that the strength takes more, costs more to process here, strength factor for the different agencies?
Generally, higher strength wastewater probably costs a little bit more to treat and process than lower strength wastewater because there's a little more material that has to be removed and handled. There's a little more, chemicals that are needed in the processing and treatment of the material.
I will. I have another reason for wanting to defer it again, and that is that in the process of attempting to get my alternate and our city manager together to confer on a path that they would recommend that the three of us would work on together to come up with, we kind of had some miscues and ended up having kind of talking at different aspects of the thing, and I think there was some misunderstandings. And so I'd rather, since the pie that has to be allocated is the same pie, it's just it's not going to delay the budget preparation to hold off till the June meeting for the actual vote on this. And so I'd like to ask that we could do that. But I wonder if it's okay to ask another question of our colleagues from Ross Valley tomorrow night when you make your decision on the
Thursday.
Oh. Okay, Thursday night. I'm off
sure.
by days. In the announcement, the notification that came to a ratepayer, I got it in the mail, it appears to me that there was an anticipation of this change in the fees that were suggested in that, because it suggested a certain amount of money going to CMSA that would only be reached if you were doing the flow method. Was that sort of like a preemptive to make sure you had enough if we made the change?
Well, the references to flow-based rates in our Prop 218 mailer
I'm sorry, you misunderstood.
Yeah.
There's a place in the Prop 218 mailer where you indicate what you pay CMSA.
For treatment.
For your fees that come to CMSA.
Okay.
The dollar amount for those fees was such that it could only be reached if you had the increase to our flow-based method. In other words, under the current...
I don't know how it got calculated. I didn't calculate myself. Our business manager would have made that calculation.
But from the standpoint of your staff report that you have, you don't know that it gives you that coverage?
I don't know where, how she, her exact methodology of calculating it. I wasn't there when she did.
No, it isn't in your report that you have for Thursday night then. I mean, I thought you would have that in your analysis for your decision on Thursday.
Well,
it would tell you
I got the agenda packets at the same time, so I haven't in detail looked at the agenda packets.
So I could look it up online.
This packet first.
Is your, so I could see that probably.
The packet is out.
Okay.
Yeah. But it is Thursday, not tomorrow.
Thank you. You meet always on Thursday?
It's a special meeting. It's the 45 days later meeting.
Yeah, okay.
So it needed to count out correctly.
All right. Well, I have a motion that we continue this.
Second.
I have a second.
To a date certain?
To a date certain of June 8th, 12th?
Whatever it is.
12th.
Is there anybody from the public who wishes to discuss this item? Seeing none. Okay, I have a motion to continue this to a date certain of June 12th and bring it back at that time. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next up is the North Bay Watershed Association report.
Yes. Last Friday, the association had a unique meeting location, and that was downtown Napa. And the reason for the meeting there was so that the members in attendance could take a tour of the dramatic flood control measures that have been taken in Napa proper. We've heard about them over the last couple of years in terms of the watersheds on a grand scale, working with the ranchers and so forth when the roads are abandoned, not just letting them lie abandoned, but changing gradients so that you don't have erosion and so forth. Well, now what we got to see were the actual projects that have been implemented from their Measure A, which was the funding model that was followed when we did our funding here for flood control in Marin. And there have been blocks of land where old warehouses have actually been removed. The contours of the river channel has been effectively, this is not the right terminology, but effectively widened and broadened so that when the river is at flood stage, it has somewhere to go. There has been riparian restoration. They're fighting geese a lot for that, but riparian vegetation. But the what was so dramatic was the ecological and engineering compatibility of all of these steps that have been taken is really quite stunning, because they, to someone like me who's a geographer, they really make sense. And, you know, we've been working on stuff like this forever, and it was really only until the last, like, 10, 12, 15 years that these two branches could sit down at the same table and realize that common goals could be met without, you know, concrete channels on the one side and complete, you know, flooding on the other. And they're daylighting several sections of Napa Creek that's been in a channel. They're pulling out the culverts and opening them up, changing streets so that they dead-end on one side and dead-end on the other, and the creek's going to be back live there. And then the most dramatic thing is that there's this area that was, they didn't have to remove a lot of vital business development or anything in the area. I think it was maybe some of it city-owned land. There was a street or a road in there. Mm-hmm. And it's the, if you were to look at the historical flood channel for Napa Creek getting at the Oxbow, which is a big deal in Napa. There's an Oxbow in the river. They have dedicated the area that a flood would have taken over in any event. In other words, a flood will say, screw the Oxbow, we're going straight to where we want to go. And they're opening it up as a big parkway. There's one road that goes through it, and in a flood time, the road will simply have barricades on both sides. There's a pedestrian bridge, so neighborhoods aren't cut off. And there are two giant diversion channels that will only be opened when they need to, and they're built with all these revetments to keep all the debris from getting in them and clogging them up. And the last thing I'll mention is something they call a root wad. And, oh, you know what it is. Of course, I had, you know, I kept hearing him say this word. They actually get 20 feet of a tree, a redwood, for example, and the gigantic root wad, the underground thing. They bring these and they put them in the channel for stabilization. And it's beautiful. And then silt and whatnot.
Wait a minute. You mean they replant the tree?
No, they're not replanted. They're actually laid out like after a flood, where they would lie if they were washing out
in
order for it to catch stuff.
It's a stream in more of a natural setting than if they weren't there, and it's also good for...
It's for wildlife, and it catches some sediment, and it allows the vegetation to grow.
Well, so when there's no water, that root... It's still there.
Right, and it might be underwater part of the time, depending upon tidal influence and all of that. So,
it's like the swamps in Florida.
And there's good, yes, exactly. Except they're quite different looking roots. I mean, Florida's got, you know, nobody can have roots like the South has. And then they have big, like two of them would fit this whole table, giant signs that are all being made weatherproof to explain what Measure A did and the changes they've made. Mm-hmm. And along the main promenade along the river in downtown where the tourist district is and whatnot, you got two or three levels that you're walking on, close to the water, up a little lawns, plantings. No one knows that those are actually flood tiers, and that the last one is a flood wall. And where we're walking could very well be underwater every 15 years. But it's designed for it. And ultimately, it then protects the... So it's really quite exciting. And the place was booming. This is the Oxbow District of Napa. So it was really nice to see the stuff getting in place and to hear the staff of the flood control offices, and there were lots of people, you know, there who were really excited to take us on the tour and show us the different components. And it really gives a visual image to some of the stuff we're going to be doing here. So,
the size of the project, was it? How does it compare to what we're going to do in Ross Valley?
Well, it's not nearly as urbanized in Napa outside of Napa proper. You pretty soon get out into your vineyards. And in the vineyards, it's a lot easier to do what needs to be done. That sounds like Prairium Companion. But because they're working without having to actually take away any structures. Here, we're dealing with a smaller geographic area, but it's more densely populated along its entire route.
Everybody's got ownership of pieces of land.
Lots of little ownership. And they have the good fortune of having some fairly significant public ownership. You know, whether it's redevelopment agency or whatever. Oh, the last thing, the wine train, you know, is there. And that's, I guess, proven to be kind of successful. I don't know. I've never been on it. But anyway, they used to prepare all their food in a boxcar. Well, the boxcar was down in the flood zone, so they had to move the boxcar. Well, when you move a food preparation facility, you suddenly no longer
have your license.
Right.
Exactly. So there's a commissary over there, courtesy of the flood control district.
Got a new facility.
Yep, they got a commissary, a beautiful big commissary.
How did you know that?
Yep.
Mayor of a city to
Well, it's especially in the food preparation. So it was really fascinating, and I'll send you the actual written report that Elizabeth did about it, and you can distribute it.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I'll do that.
That's great.
They build that Four Seasons Hotel downtown.
Did they close it?
Did they build it?
Oh gosh.
They're going to build a big Four Seasons. It's been about 3 years since I've been there, on the far side. You know, you got the downtown.
You know, I don't think it actually happened, but I think that I heard a little bit of talk. The one that has really gone gangbusters is the Napa River Inn, which is a historic building and an old granary and whatnot, and that is $500 a night and booked solid. It's right on the river. I mean, now you look out and see this beautiful stuff.
Same thing in Healdsburg. You know, they got rooms $400 and $500 a night. I don't get it.
Healdsburg?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They built a second hotel in downtown Healdsburg.
And people are flocking there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Sebastopol.
It's a great little city.
Well, wine has a certain cachet. Je ne sais quoi.
Any other comments for
you? No, very nice. Thank you.
Okay. Jason,
can you top that?
With the French at the end.
I was at the CASA conference a couple weeks ago in Napa, and the last session at the conference was a panel discussion of the Napa River restoration work. You know, the mayor of Napa was there, and Bruce Wolf, the executive director of the Regional Water Board, was there talking about the regulatory drivers for the Napa restoration work. And but it wasn't nearly as exciting as your tour, that panel discussion. So,
I'll take it.
No, it's the way
she presented
the passion, I'm sure, wasn't there.
All the sludge stones, yeah.
Well, these guys were passionate about it.
Eric, Ed McCormick's band.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Judy Shreeman's all-girl group, Sludge Sisters.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Okay.
I know Judy Shreeman pretty well, but I don't know the Sludge Sisters. So just, I don't have a handout report for you, but just a few things to brief you on. You know, we've just we're recruiting for a new administrative assistant, and the advertisement period closed on that, and we received over 300 applications for that position. So we'll be reviewing those over the next few weeks and selecting the top candidates for first interviews. And Mary's agreed to help us review applications and sit on the interview panel. So thanks, Mary, for that. Then, end of April, early May, we had several tours of the agency, three tours by College of Marin students. The Marin Waldorf School took a tour, and so did Marin Academy.
Together?
Different days.
Oh, shucks.
Then I told you, a few months ago that the agency had won several awards through the California Water Environment Association, and specifically the regional, was it the River Empire section. One of the awards was for our radio telemetry antenna array that we installed on the top of Anderson Drive. And that was for the Gimmick and Gadget Award. Right. So since we won the regional award, it qualifies for consideration for the state level award. And we got second place in the state of California for that Gimmick and Gadget Award. And we got a $200 check from CWBA, so we're going to call the Susie Q Catering and have a catered lunch here for the employees with that award check. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have to report.
There's a plaque on the antenna.
Yeah, second place CWBA.
Okay, are there any comments from commissioners? Okay, seeing none, I will adjourn this meeting until June 12th at 7 p.m. Thank you.